Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Everything Iconic with me, Danny Pellegrino. The Real Housewives of New York season 14 premiere is upon us. How are we all feeling? Do we like the new gals? Do we miss the old gals? Now, it's a completely rebooted cast of characters for Roni season 14, so it's a lot to take in. Now, I did get chills during those opening credits when we get all of the women doing their taglines, because at the end of it with the group shot, they're all holding them apples, and they're literally leaning on each other in that opening group shot, which is so different than some of our other franchises when we're getting a CGI version of Margaret standing next to Teresa, and they're not even in the same room together. Do you know what I mean? So here on The Real Housewives of New York, just seeing all of the women together as a cohesive group, I mean, it gave me chills. I loved it. I was so excited. Now, then the episode starts, and I'll be completely honest. Want to give my unedited opinion here on Everything Iconic, so do not yell at me in the DMs if I have a different opinion. I'm just trying to be honest and open with you all. And it was an ever-evolving journey, my opinion on this premiere episode, because the first time that I watched it, I'll be honest, I didn't love it. That's my God honest truth. And so I ended up talking to some friends and a lot of people that I know and trust that were telling me, Danny, you got to watch it again. It was so good. There's so much love about it. Try it again. So I went in and I watched it a second time. My expectations were lowered a little bit. I got my bearings and I found so much to love. That whole restaurant fight, which was blurred out, I thought that was fantastic. I'm obsessed with Brynn. And in general, all of the women, I'm excited to get to know more, which I think is a great sign. But still, even after that second viewing, which I liked a lot, I still wasn't like over the moon about it. I still watched it. And I was like, I liked it more and my expectations were lower and I'm excited about going forward. But I didn't think it was like the greatest episode I've ever seen of any TV show. Now, this is why it's ever evolving, because last night, a podcast episode came out between Bethany Skinny Girl Ham Frankel and Jill Ruggs Zarin, where they sat down for the first time since they were on the show together to hash out their relationship on Bethany's podcast. That's right. It was like an hour and a half of those two sitting down. And I think it was just part one because they kept alluding to the fact that we're going to record something else. But it was an unedited interview between Bethany and Jill. And supposedly that was done because Jill had been burned in the past with editing or whatever. So they had agreed that they would just do a completely unedited conversation. So the podcast episode literally ends with them just like talking about animals who have passed. I mean, it was the most wild ending. I don't even know if that makes any sense. But it just ends with them discussing people who've passed. And there's no, like, goodbye. It just sort of trails off with them being like, well, and then Cookie passed. And it's like, what's going on? And then it just cuts out. Like, that's the ending. So it's completely, that's the end. But the whole hour and a half is wild, so chaotic, talking over each other. There's so much tenseness in the air between Jill and Bethany. So every single time one of them is talking, you're just wondering, like, is this going to erupt in a fight? And they're going backwards and talking about fights that they had in the past, about who brought who along and sending flowers when Bobby was sick and all this stuff that we're dredging up from the past. They also reveal that for Bobby's funeral, Jill Zarin did not even sign a release. So she's in an episode when Bobby passed and Bethany approaches her on the street and Jill said she never signed a release form, but Bravo was banking on the fact that allegedly she wouldn't sue or something like that. So there is a lot of tea spilled in this podcast episode between Bethany and Jill. However, there was so much stuff being brought up from the past that just bummed me out that by the end of the hour and a half, I was like, thank God we rebooted The Real Housewives of New York. Thank Andy Cohen that we rebooted The Real Housewives of New York, because just hearing the two of them drudge up that stuff from the past, I like could not go backwards. And one of the arguments about The Real Housewives of New York is just that it got so kind of toxic between the women. There was so much drinking and fighting, and it got really heavy-handed a lot of the times on The Real Housewives of New York up through season 13. And I always stuck up for that. But by the end of this podcast episode, I was like, I just need fresh and light and fun, because hearing Jill and Bethany, who weren't even, I'd say, the most toxic on the cast of The Real Housewives of New York previously.
I like dick.
And they hadn't even been around for very long. They'd been off the show for so long, but just hearing the same arguments that we had in the past, I was so, that made me the most excited going forward with this new cast of women on The Real House of New York. So I'm cautiously optimistic and very excited. And although I do have a few critiques, I think ultimately the premiere episode was good, but we're going to have to wait and see because the first episode is never really all that great in general. And it's going to take a while for these women to gel together. So we're going to have to go to BravoTV.com for more information and just watch what happens live like we always do. Now, I want to let you know that the Everything Iconic Orange County recap will be on hiatus this week, so we will not be recapping Orange County. I got some personal health stuff going on, and so there will be, I believe, an End Just Like That episode later this week, but there will not be an Orange County recap. So I just want to let you all know. I have a guest joining me for the Real Housewives of New York recap in just a minute. My guest, Jess, is a New York Bravo expert, and she's going to be joining me to break down the premiere. Jess has a new podcast called Finding Fire Island, which you can listen to wherever you get your podcasts. Now, I want to remind you all that Everything Iconic live show tickets are on sale. I'm going to be on tour in October, so get tickets at everythingiconic.com. At the top of the page, there's a link for the live show tickets, so you get those there. You can also pre-order my book. It's called The Jolliest Bunch, out October 24th. With all that said, please enjoy my chat with Jess. We're going to break down this whole episode of The Real Housewives of New York. Woo!
Let's go,
girl.
Jess Rothschild, she created this podcast, Finding Fire Island, that if you're interested in Fire Island at all, which you should be, go check out this podcast. She also hosts a podcast called Hot Takes and Deep Dives. Jess, how are you today?
Danny, where do we even begin?
Oh my God, Roni.
I canceled cable. I made the critical error of actually going through my credit card bill and identifying all these things that I should really just get rid of. And unfortunately, I did that the week of the Vanderpump reunion part 3.
Oh my God.
So cut to me the day that's airing, like getting a friend's login to be able to watch it on Bravo live, you know, like the app live. And so last night I was faced with the same thing of, oh God, it's like I'm not part of this. And so I did wait until, I didn't want to deal with watching it on the app. So I watched it twice.
Jess, I watched it twice too for you.
Yeah.
Because the first time, I'll be completely honest, and I saved the DMs. I don't want people yelling at me. The first time I watched it, I really did not care for it. I'm sorry to say that. I think there's a lot of good things about it that we're going to get into. And of course, if you're someone out there listening to this and you like thought it was the best thing ever, I don't want to take away that joy because everyone wants joy. And so there was a lot that I loved about it too. So I want to get that out of the way. But the first time I watched, did not care for it. And then actually, surprisingly enough, the second time I watched it, I definitely found more that I really liked about it. And before we even get into the details, the other caveat I want to say is that any sort of like first episode of a season is, I don't think, ever good, even for long-standing housewives, because we sort of have to catch up to where they are. We have to get our surroundings and our bearings. And I always think it like sort of starts to ramp up after a few episodes, no matter what the franchise is. And then even going further than that, the first episode ever of a Housewives, I think, is a very tricky thing, because there's not really, especially with this group, I don't think they had much of a past with each other. So there wasn't really like that to latch on to. And
don't let Andy Cohen lie to you, because they did not. I think that two of them knew each other maybe in like a previous life. Jenna Lyons did not know these people. She like maybe ran into one of the women at a few like fashion parties, but these are not a quote group of friends. That is a bold-faced lie.
Wait, Jess, tell me about, you helped cast, you told, were telling me over email or something, you helped cast this. You have to explain this story.
Okay, I'm going to do this quickly because I don't want to say this too much, or I don't want to repeat the story too often, but I am part of the ecosystem that helped drive the casting of Jenna Lyons. Basically, before it was announced that Roni was going to split and all of this, like we just finished, this was 2021. I had just interviewed Luann for Hot Takes and Deep Dives, and I was saying to her in that interview, what New York really needs is a lesbian housewife or like a trans woman. I was just, you know, saying anything to like shake it up, because we were on the heels of that, quite frankly, terrible 13th season. And Luann said, like, she agreed. She's like, yeah, like, I'm all for it. And so that kind of circulated in the news that like, oh, like Luann is down for like a lesbian trans house. You know, I'm just kind of like you know, throw shit against the wall, see what sticks. That week, a friend of mine who hosts a podcast called Dyking Out, it's like a lesbian, you know, culture podcast, they're doing a live episode, the guest, Jenna Lyons. I'm in the audience, and these are like my really good friends. And so they all know, you know, what's going on. And my friend says to Jenna, or Jenna was saying, because she had done that HBO Max show Stylish, which is very much like the Jenna Lyons. It was like the sort of Stylish with Jenna Lyons was the rich man's big shot with Bethany. To put it in plain language.
I love when anytime that show comes up, Big Shot with Bethany. Like, it was a crazy fever dream of a show that was horrendously terrible.
Her peering out the window.
I think about it all the time. And actually, it's so weird because I was just thinking, I haven't done my yearly rewatch of Bethany Ever After yet. And I think it's one of the most incredible rewatches across these all of these shows. There's just like so many layers that just unravel like an onion over time. By the end of that third season of Bethany Ever After, you're just like, oh my God, it's like haunting. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
You know, I interviewed Dr. Amador for Therapist.
I did too. Oh my God.
Oh my God, like, did
yes,
you?
Yes, I did. Back in the day, I did interview Dr. Amador, who got them Lost at Sea.
We have the same sick mind. Oh, we went so deep on Lost at Sea. we both did that insane shit. Yeah. Anyway, so cut to us, we're live in the room, and Jenna was saying that she would want to do like a reality version of The L Word, which, P.S., there already was three seasons of. Yeah. And so my friend was smart enough to say, how about The Real Housewives of New York? And she said, oh, she's like, oh, well, like, I know Andy Cohen. And we're like, of course you do. So that airs. Cut to a few months later, the Roni split is announced. I have my two friends who hosted that podcast on, and we kind of just to talk about the Roni split. And in that conversation, we talk about this whole thing with Jenna Lyons, how she said she would willingly go on Roni. And we basically made this really strong pitch for like why she would be a great housewife. I mean, that still remains to be seen, but I think I'm feeling that she is a good housewife so far. I clipped out that like that segment of us talking and like really pitching Jenna, and I put it on YouTube, and I put the like the thumbnail, like The Real Housewives of New York with like Jenna included, and the title was basically like Jenna Lyons wants to join Roni, and then that circulated, and I think it started to like
push things
circulate
along
in the ether. And then I think she started to text Andy or the conversations.
And so probably it helped like her Eric warm up to the idea too a little bit, I would imagine.
Yeah, because ultimately she has so many restrictions, by the way. She's in a full-blown relationship. She's not talking about that. Not on the show. And not only that, she's like saying, we're not talking about it. In the second episode, my friend Brendan Davis, who's fantastic, he has a Housewives podcast, Come Through Queen.
Oh, right.
Which
we love
would love them. He's actually seen the first three episodes. I was at his birthday this weekend, and he said that already in episode two, they're in the Hamptons. So this is a good thing that they're like following the prototype.
I worry about Jenna Lyons, though, because I worry about her wanting to open up, who I understand. Look, if I was going on reality TV, if I had children or something, I might be like, I don't want my kids on there. I don't want my significant on there. I would be like that. I get that. But I don't want that for my reality stars. And so I worry that's going to be the place we're in with Jenna going forward. What was the vibe? What sort of her, this is maybe an inappropriate question, but like, what's her sort of reputation within the lesbian community? Or like, what? I didn't really know much about her.
So what's interesting is that she's not really in the lesbian community.
Okay.
She just kind of like does her own thing. Like she's very much like she was married for many, many years. Like they have this 15-year-old kid, and then she was outed by the New York Post, like literally like at work. They called J. Crew while she was still there saying, we have photos of you with this woman. I think her marriage is already over. She started seeing this woman, and they were like, if you don't come out with this, like, we're going to print. And she was like, just print it.
Oh, interesting.
And so I don't think she's in she's not in the gay community. I know, here's like spoiler alert, like much later in the season, they go to Henrietta Hudson, which is like a lesbian, it's like a cubby hole, it, you know, and the whole thing is like getting Jenna to like flirt with girls, which makes no sense because she's in a long, she has a girlfriend.
Okay. Okay.
By this point. Oh, so,
but
I
she's hiding
tell,
the girlfriend
like,
from the show. Or we'll, that'll be, remain to be seen. Yeah, we need to keep seeing. We need to keep seeing. I want to talk about the quirkiness. This was the thing that I felt like I most wanted to kind of voice when I was trying to think of how I felt about this episode. And the whole first premiere is about this like cheese plate, this charcuterie thing. And the issue that I took with it, and this is me being nitpicky, again, just going back to, we know the first episode is going to be tough to get to know. And I think there is this pressure now. Of course, we're so in the era of Scandoval and these court cases and stuff. We want something, right? We want some juice, some drama.
We want an arrest in episode one.
Right. The first episode of The Real Housewives of New York, the original iteration, it didn't really give us much. We were just sort of like meeting these people. So
if you go back to see, I always tell people, like people who haven't watched The Housewives, with Roni, I always say start at season 7.
Oh.
Because it's when Bethany comes
How
back
dare you, Jess?
And it's
I don't feel that way.
Really?
I think season Wait, 3 let me get is my, like let me, one of the best. But go ahead, keep going.
Let me give my pitch. Let me give my pitch for season 7. It's when Bethany first comes back and it's Dorinda's first season. So it is like a rebirth in a way. I feel like if you were to start at the beginning, it's like too slow. Yeah. And season 3, you're like, why am I invested in Bethany and Jill? Mm. You haven't seen. So I feel like if somebody were to start at season 7 and watch the 5 preceding, you know, watch the 5 succeeding seasons, I feel like, okay, now you can go back to the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. That makes
you
sense.
Feel like somebody can start at season 3 and understand what's
I'm
going on?
I'm the type of person who always has started season 1. I know those first seasons can be boring, but I think it gives context to the whole thing. And so I don't think a season 1 of most of these shows are very good. I thought Salt Lake City did a really good first season, but it was a little bit of an anomaly to me. But otherwise, I don't think, if I look back at some of the early seasons, but I still think people should kind of go to get contacts, meet the players. And that's how I feel like we're doing with this reboot, is like trying to get to know the players a little bit. And then I think by season, I guess it'll be 15, 16, hopefully we'll have something and they'll get rid of the kind of boringness. But so the quirky thing though that I think there is this pressure for on the production side to have something for the first episode. So they made this cheese charcuterie fight and they positioned it as kind of like, look at a quirky little petty fight about nonsense. Like that's funny to the audience, but I don't feel like any of the cast thought it was funny. So that was like my main problem. So if I look at something like The Real Housewives of Orange County, when they had like Heather getting mad about that woman eating the bow on her cake, that to me feels like a similar type of tone of what they were going for. But I think that was more natural. And I think that was just following Heather's oversized reaction, which might have been acting a little bit, that she got so mad about the bow on the cake. But it still was funny, I think, as an audience. And the editors kind of leaned into that. Or if I look at Salt Lake City, their very first episode had this quirky thing about smelling like hospital, right? Mary Cosby said. But that, to me, was the cast organically having these quirky moments, whereas with the charcuterie thing, I felt like they had nothing, and so they had to edit into something, and it was like they were using editing and producing tricks to make it seem like, oh, this is a funny, quirky fight.
But wasn't it revealed later that she made that up?
Yeah, it was like a little bit on... It was like nothingness. I felt like they were all just sort of grasping at straws. Even the women, I think, were like, oh, we need something...
I think that was an event. I think that was a night that was filmed with who was the woman?
Oh, yeah, there
who was
another. There was another cast member that was.
Her name is Lizzie Savetsky. So somebody when they came out on stage at BravoCon, it was this cast and this other woman, and she wound up being fired. Like they started filming. So what we're seeing now, they've already been filming for a month because this other woman had been filming with them, but she said some bigoted remark to another cast member, and then she wound up, they wanted the production wanted her to kind of like explain herself. She wound up doubling down and she was fired.
Oh, wow.
So I think the whole cheese thing, which I agree with you, is I don't want to watch things like this on my television. This is boring.
I'm fine
and
if it's organic, like, or if it just sort of happened. I don't know. I just felt like it was all done in post. I felt like that whole thing was post.
See, I got the vibe it was filmed, but it was filmed with this woman, so they couldn't use it. So I think they should have just cut the whole thing. To me, in terms of like quirkiness, they could have. I guess they didn't have enough for the first episode. To me, the fight about suggesting they go to catch the restaurant. Yes. This to me is what the Real Housewives of New York is about.
I loved that.
This is so New York, so realistic. I have had this very conversation with friends. I'm not going there. And I've been the person, no, let's not go. Let's go someplace else.
And I want to mention they edit out the catch. So we don't know that. But they've come out and said, I think some of the housewives, I think I saw maybe Jessel said that it was catch on Instagram or something. It's been confirmed.
Yeah. And like catch, I mean, isn't there a catch in LA now?
There is, yeah, yeah.
The thing with catch is it's a tourist trap. It's a tourist trap in the meatpacking district. Like, if you're thinking of like Sex and the City, like this is the area that Samantha eventually moved to. So like that's like the, if you can kind of, you know, picture like Cobblestone Street, it's just a tourist trap. And for them to say that they'd rather go to the Olive Garden, I mean, that's a no. Mm-hmm. But this was so New York. This felt like something that like Bethany would pull.
I loved the blurring of the name, and I don't know if that was for legal reasons, I'm assuming, but that was funny to me. And also I like the way that's something that's only New York specific, right? Like that's the kind of fight or the kind of feud that we're going to get there. And it's funny and silly and petty. And yeah, I thought that was perfect. And to me, I would almost wish that would have been the thing of the episode instead of the charcuterie thing. It just didn't land with me, and maybe it landed for other people, but I just thought it was silly and stupid, and not silly in a fun way.
Can we talk, speaking of Samantha Jones, can we talk about that Tony Danza was at the Roni premiere to promote Che Pasa?
Oh my God, Jess, I know. What was going on? Tony Danza, what were you at the premiere party for the Real Housewives season?
No, Bravo doesn't know I'm alive.
Okay. Well, Tony Danza, I did see photos, so they know Tony Danza's alive. And yeah, there's so many like weird crossovers.
And also was Eve Plum was there. Jan from the original Brady Bunch. Jan Brady was there.
Wild.
And your favorite Bravo influencers that are not Danny and myself.
Jan Brady. What was Jan Brady doing there? Like that was wild.
Girl.
Does she have a connection to somebody? Like why was Eve Plum at the Real Housewives New York premiere party? I don't understand.
Can you imagine them just like trying to invite people and they're like, well, these people are in town.
Wait, so I want to talk about another thing that I really did love about the episode. And this might also be controversial, but I loved Brynn. And I'm curious what your take is, because I do think she's a divisive person. But I felt like she had the quirkiness. The whole show starts off with a little line about she calls someone a whore or something like she. And I am attracted to like her outspokenness. I could see other people feeling like she's just doing it for camera. I understand that. I think she is kind of playing things up and trying to have kind of memeable moments and stuff like that. But she worked for me in a way that I wasn't expecting.
I really liked her. Word on the street, like from people who have been, my friends who were at the Henrietta Hudson filming, like she showed up in like a pajama situation to that. She's messy. Like she's arriving as a fully formed housewife in a way that Jenna Lyons is very much just being authentically herself. Jenna Lyons isn't going to shit herself on the jitney the way Sonia is. Like that's not gonna you're not gonna get that from like Jenna. To me is let me ask you this. Who is so it sounds like Brynn is popping for you. Who else is jumping off the page for you?
She was the main, she was the only one. I really did like, I'm interested in Jenna Lyons. Like I want to keep watching and getting to know her more. Like I don't know that she really like gave me a specific moment that jumped out, but I'm really like, I need to get to know her. Same with Uba, where I feel like I want to know more about Uba, because especially I think in the premiere, we didn't really get much Uba. And so I'd like to know more about her. I mean, I'd say that that's the thing really with all of them is like, I'm interested to get to know them a little bit better so that I can judge in a few episodes, like how they fit in. But the only one that really like jumped to me was Brynn. I think also Erin arrives, like you said, as a fully formed housewife. Like there was a moment in the, at the end of the episode where she pulls Brynn aside. And of course, I think probably a producer told her, why don't you two have a separate conversation about this? But it just felt so like 10 seasons in of like, can I pull you aside for this conversation? And I just, oh, she's fully that already.
Erin jumped off the page for me. Sai jumped off the page for me. Like, Sai is fun. So I really like that. And I liked Brid. Uba, honestly, I don't know anything about her.
They didn't give anything.
And there was another one who they didn't really, maybe Jessel. They didn't really delve into her. I felt like the only ones where you really got a sense of who the person was Erin and Jenna Lyons.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Brynn, even though she popped for me, I don't know that I know exactly who she is yet. She's sort of a smart ass and like, Yeah.
Erin gave me, I mean, I have to look up where she's from. Okay. I'm from Long Island. Listen, I'm a Long Island Jew. I was getting Long Island Jew vibes from her. Like, this is why I'm so, feel so connected to Jill Zarin or even Bethany. These people are like, Bethany grew up in like Queens.
How New York do they all feel to you? Like, as a whole, how New York do they feel?
Erin feels very New York. I don't know where Jenna Lyons is from. I mean, Jenna Lyons has lived in New York forever. I mean, Jenna Lyons has been to the Met Ball. Like, Jenna Lyons is like a New York businesswoman. The rest, I don't know. I'd wonder when they.
I worry about Sai being an influencer. I don't love that. I don't know if some people out there might have liked the Paris show that was canceled on Bravo, the Girlfriends of Paris.
Oh, the Real Girlfriends of Paris.
But I just in general worry about influencer types. I don't know, because
the problem with Summer House.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Did you see that they cast these two new frat boys?
No, are they influencers on Summer House? Are they new?
No, but they're just like two straight like bros, two new ones.
Here's the problem:
they can never get that casting.
I know. Summer House, the original iteration, is in a rough spot right now, I think. And do you sort of miss an older 60-plus woman, which we're not going to get now? They rebooted it, and of course, the original Real Housewives of New York, they weren't that age when they started. But in my head, I just always like a. Over 60.
Who is giving you center apple energy?
I think Brynn so far. But I worry about Brynn being like flaming out a little bit, because if she goes so hard to kind of be she could fizzle out over time, or she could be leaning in too far, or you know, I think we can see, the audiences can see through the bullshit. So it's fun for me right now, and I like that energy. But I think that could be the problem if I'm looking forward with Brynn, is like, that could be an issue. Maybe it's not.
Jessel's the one who puked at the premiere.
Oh, yeah. Because
she had a stomach bug.
But I kind of thought, yeah, she puked at the premiere. And there was this Page Six article about her doing it because she had the stomach bug. And a lot of people were like, oh, Roni's back, because people were saying
it's got to be from those damn toddlers. It's got to be because of those damn toddlers she's got. Like, they're walking Petri dishes. So I feel
little kids, bad. Like people are sick all the time.
Okay. How did you feel about this show is now overrun with children?
I think one of the other issues is that it's back to back with Crappy Lake. And that's both a blessing and a curse, because in my head, it's impossible for me to not compare the two. And I had watched Crappy Lake alongside the Real Housewives of New York. So I had watched them, like, they're airing right now. But I think that's a little bit of the worry, is that it's easy to compare. And I got to recalibrate my brain to, like, not compare to Sonia and Luann, because those are just different women. Those are different people. And so those are quirks that we've come to love over 100 years on the show. And so, yeah. Did I answer your question?
Can we talk? I don't remember the question.
I'm not used to this, Jess. I'm not used to having another podcaster on asking me questions. This is wild. I like it.
Can we talk about the real estate porn?
Yes. And specifically Jenna Lyons' house, which I loved. And what was her name? Erin had like kind of shaded it. She's like, "Well, the resale value on this house isn't great because it's set up weird. And there's like a really big room."
Let me tell you something about New York real estate. Apartments are funky here. Even the $5 million ones, there's always something strange. If you think back to what's interesting, is both Jenna and Bethany live on, well, Bethany's now gone, but they're both on Mercer. So like, what you're looking at, Jenna Lyons' apartment is 2.5 blocks from the apartment that the bulk of the Carol and Bethany friendship took place in.
Wow.
I
just got chills.
Did it give you chills?
Yeah, it gave me chills. That friendship dissolution was wild. Wait, how much do you think Jenna's house or apartment would rent for? Do we have or own? Oh, would or rent own, for? Or own? I should
oh,
ask.
Well, you can find out. I think she bought it for. I can do a quick search here and find. I found the floor plan earlier.
Oh, interesting.
Today, who do I you was think really is, digging.
She's the richest, then, right? Do you think she's the richest? Yeah,
oh,
for sure.
For okay. sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think the others are genuinely rich?
Those apartments are millions.
Yeah.
And even like a $2 million apartment in New York City is still a dump.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing about New York. Oh, this is what I was going to say about Bethany's apartment. So Aaron critiquing the flow of Jenna's apartment, Bethany's apartment, like you know how she had that long hallway? You open the door into Bethany's apartment. I cannot reveal how I know the details of this. You open the door of Bethany's apartment and there's a long, skinny hallway. That's where she had that like skinny girl red couch.
Skinny girl hallway.
Mm-hmm. Right off the front door was Bethany's bedroom. The windows in that bedroom, you know, like in a basement, like when you're growing up, like as a kid, you know how the windows are really high up and they're like that high? They're like these really like small windows.
And you're looking out at like cinder blocks with like a touch of light.
Yes. That was Bethany's apartment, and it looked out over a Foot Locker.
Was that the most recent Bethany apartment? Not the original.
It was the one where with like the Nutcracker.
Okay.
Like when Bethany came back, you know how she was homeless, and then eventually she got an apartment? That one.
Yeah. I hate you so much because I love that you said the Nutcracker, but the fact that we all just know like, oh, the Nutcracker.
That apartment sold for like $5 million. It's a two bedroom with cinder block windows.
Yeah. So the apartments, I'm not so familiar with like living in New York. I'm in California and it's just completely different. The real estate market's completely different and it's expensive here, but in New York, it's like just completely different.
That's why people always complain that like, oh, the apartments on Roney aren't glam. It's like, yeah, what the women on Atlanta are paying for there, that is just the function of New York City, that you can have a $1 or $2 million apartment. You're still living in a one bedroom and there's only so much you can dress it up and it's still small. Like no matter, it's insane, the real estate here.
By the way, I love that the whole show opened with Psy at her apartment because she's in Brooklyn, and I just thought it was like a little bit of a tip of the hat to Alex McCord, a little bit, because back in the day, Alex McCord, longtime viewers remember, she was in Brooklyn while Jill was a mean girl, and Brooklyn, they all looked down on the fact that she lived in Brooklyn, and now we're opening this reboot with the glamorous Brooklyn apartment of Psy. I like that.
Psy said one of the most relatable things. This is one of the few times I've ever really related to something a housewife has said, which is that she grew up walking the streets of Brooklyn or walking the streets of the West Village. When you walk around these neighborhoods, you do tend to just like look up at these brownstones and you can see right into them. You can see what people are watching on TV or cooking for dinner. So that, and you often think like, oh, what would it be like to live? Like I've had that exact conversation. And so I really related to that. That's the absurdity factor of like, these brownstones are so expensive and yet you have no privacy. If you truly want privacy, you would need shades down at all times. Otherwise, people are looking straight in.
I love that that chair that was in Jenna's closet that wasn't a chair. Like they fell through it. This is so stupid. Wait, there was something I was going to say. The thing that I worry, just because we were talking about Psy and how she's an influencer, and there was a moment later in the episode where I noticed she had her cell phone in her hand, and I think that worried me a little bit because, and I know we all carry our cell phones in our hands, but an influencer, if you know kind of influencer people who always have their phone in their hand, always are ready to take a photo of the food, of what's going on. And I suppose that's what worries me in terms of the engagement with the other women, because you're always going to be thinking of what content should you be gathering? And it's like, well, I want the producers to gather the content, not her.
But they were smart enough to use those phones and document the fact that they went to that other restaurant. That is them producing.
So you're right. Yeah, that is good. We got to take a quick break here. We'll be back with so much more with Jess talking about the Real Housewives of New York. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ever since I saw Clueless, I wanted to have the most amazing wardrobe, and that includes all of the clothes inside the wardrobe closet, and that's why I'm excited to talk to you about Quince. Now, Quince has you covered with truly timeless pieces that never go out of style. You'll have them in your closet forever. Quince has all sorts of must-haves. I'm talking Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50. I have a blue cashmere crew neck sweater I got from them that I get so many compliments on all the time. I love it. Plus, iconic 100% leather jackets and versatile flow-knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes us savings all over to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. Love that. Makes you feel good about shopping with Quince. Again, I've gotten a lot of stuff there. Just good quality pieces and a lot of different options if you're looking to upgrade your wardrobe. So indulge in the affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/iconic for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/iconic to get free shipping and 365-day returns, quince.com/iconic. Okay, wait, mm-hmm. Jessel, we didn't really talk. She's a publicist. Again, she threw up at the premiere. Did Jessel work for you in terms of the rest of... They introduced us to her mother, too, which I think they're presenting her mother as like a supporting character for Jessel, which could go one of multiple ways. It could be because they see the value in the mother because she's a quirky individual and we need some of these side characters, or it could be we need something else for Jessel.
Listen, she's got these kids. That's an automatic strike for me. For me, Brynn wins for not having any children and Jenna wins for her child being 15 and off camera.
Are we going to get any of Jenna Lyons' kid? They should have photo, but we're not getting anything. Do you know anything about her situation with the kid? I don't know. I haven't done research on her.
Just that what she said on the show, that she has shared custody with the ex-husband.
Did people really like her show on HBO Max, Stylish? Like, I don't remember anyone really, I didn't watch it, but I don't remember people really liking it.
I watched it because I'm gay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like into Jenna Lyons.
Yeah.
So.
I was probably rewatching Bethany Ever After at the time.
Which is sad. And it sucks that both of those shows are now pulled from HBO Max, which is not even now.
It's disgusting.
Wait, the best. I have to tell you this. I was listening to Sarah Jessica Parker on Howard Stern, and at the end of the interview, he goes, watching Just Like That on Max, and he goes, are you happy they took away HBO from the name? And she's like, yeah, I'm thrilled.
She was not thrilled.
I just love that he was like acknowledging the fact that like...
Yeah, they changed it. It doesn't make any sense. They just premiered the Project Greenlight, which I love that show. The original Project Greenlight, they just came out with a new season. Issa Rae is the one sort of shepherding this whole thing. But they had so much signage because the show Project Greenlight's about making a movie. And so there's like, they're showing carpets at certain times and signage, and all of it said HBO Max. And I was like, oh man, they changed everything now. And I don't know. It's different. It's a great show though. I thought it was great. Okay. So Jenna hosted a clothing theme night. She said when she worked at J. Crew, she used to do a specific color. So I think it was like metallics, khaki, and something else. She told all the gals to wear, and they mostly showed up in all black, which I would have done too. I like that about having a theme party, the idea of just having a color instead of, I hate when I have to do like a full blown costume. How do you feel about costume parties?
I only on Halloween. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me to dress up for your birthday. I'm not your puppet. No. I did throw a New Year's party once and like we made it like black and gold, but that's easy.
I also think there's too much pressure when you're even hosting a costume party because then you're so stressed. You not only have to host a party, but then you also are thinking the whole time, like, are people going to show up in the fucking costume? Because a lot of people don't show up in a costume. Yeah.
I felt like Jenna's apartment, I mean, I can't wait to see more of this. I mean, she's actually done like an architectural digest. I've done like deep dives on her apartment in the past. And her apartment, I felt was the only one that wasn't totally sterile. Mm. Like, I love that it had personality and like it had color and it like, it, I homey. Just felt that it was really, Yeah, it felt lived in.
Right.
The others were just like white, white, white.
Did you like, you know, Jenna's shoe closet? She said she had 380 pairs of shoes, give or take. She got rid of some. But yeah, I liked the shoe closet.
Yeah, I love that she gave the shoe closet the window instead of her bedroom.
What did you make? So they play a game at the end of the episode and they start talking about sex, which I also have to point out, there was like a Heinz bean. Did you notice this?
What?
There was a can of beans on the table, like next to Jenna during this scene at the end. And no one explained it. And I loved it. But also, like, what the fuck was going on? Just like a can of beans. Just amongst, she had all that gorgeous food. She had the fondue. She had the charcuterie at Jenna Lyons' apartment. Mm-hmm. And then it was just one can of beans that they was never explained. Mm-hmm. We need one in maybe next week's episode. You know how they do like the never before seen footage? We need someone to explain the beans, which I also have to say that I miss going back to those old school episodes of Housewives. I do miss, and I wish Bravo would bring back that one scene they used to do around 40 minutes into the episode that had nothing to do with the rest of the episodes. The quirky, weird scene of just people at home doing nonsense. I miss that.
Okay, wait. I'm so glad you brought this up. Otherwise, I may have actually forgot. I'm about to turn this into a plug for my own shit.
Okay, please.
But this is related to Roni. Okay. One of those is Bethany going to Fire Island.
Yes. Yes, where she danced. Do you remember? She dance or something?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's... I posted it on my Instagram like years ago. And so I need to like repost it. And it's Bethany going to, it's like a 2 minute interstitial where it's Bethany going to the Pines. You see her on the ferry and the whole time she's just like, they're gay. They're gay. It's as if she's like never seen gay people before. And when Roni was living on Hulu, it would like live there. In some random fucking episode. And so thank you for evoking that for a plug.
They need to bring it back. Everyone listen to your podcast about Fire Island and bring those back. I would like to see it. Yes. I also think it gives us insight into these people's lives, because that was what I also felt was missing from this episode. It's like, they just sort of threw us into the group. And part of that might have been circumstance with having to refilm or reshoot. And you had mentioned somebody was let go. Was she let go or was she?
I think she was fired.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really follow much of that. But so maybe that was like a circumstance of like getting to know these women. But they just sort of threw us in. And I might have been slow, but I might have liked being able to touch down in all of their homes solo before we got them all together.
Or at least give us more. I felt they did a really good job through Jenna herself, through confessionals, and also having the other women describe Jenna. You got a sense of her soul. Like even that little scene where it was a play off of like the sex stuff, but when she was talking about how I don't have sex with men, and they flash into her confessional, her saying like with two women, you know how it works, and like you like working together. Like she had... There was something, her actual authentic self was shining through the screen. I noticed it because it's usually so absent in these Housewives shows where you felt her true essence. And it was like a romantic something. And it was noticeable.
Erin was shading Jenna in her confessional about like liking or not liking dill, and she likes olives, but not black olives. I was like, this is not, it was like nonsense. You know, she was like,
I liked how they described her as being moody. Like you're getting these characteristics through the other people. Whereas like, I have no idea what like Jessel's personality is.
Right. So do you worry about they were playing this game, which I think that's another producer thing of like, we need something to happen. So like, let's play this game. Those are the kind of moments, and I wonder if I'm like looking into it too much as like someone who analyzes this stuff like sports, like, right? We recap these shows. And so I'm worried, am I looking at that? Because I'm looking at it like, oh, the producers could tell it was boring. And I get the vibe, and I could be totally off base. I get the vibe that sort of behind the scenes, they don't maybe think this is great.
Okay, so here's what I'll say about that. I'm a devoted listener of Andy's radio show, Andy Cohen Live on Sirius. Like a month ago, he'll talk about when he like watches cuts of episodes. He said, oh, I just watched like 5 episodes of the new Roni. Like he was like in the middle of watch. So maybe he's like 10 episodes in. He goes, He could barely get the words out of his mouth, but he was basically like, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said. And I was like, oh God, it's shit.
That's how I feel too, Jess, because I feel like every interview I see, that's the vibe of like, it's just so different. Don't compare, which those are important things. Like, we don't want to compare to the other one. It's going to be a completely different show. But I just get the vibe, and maybe we're reading too much into it. But yeah, if you listen to interviews, you could usually tell when he's like so kind of over the moon about something. And he used to be that. I mean, I know Roni is really important, I think, to the mm-hmm. whole network, because it's new. The network, they're mostly based in New York, and it's a New York franchise. And so, but well, yeah, I get
the
that
most
vibe.
Critically, it was Roni was the most critically acclaimed of the franchises. Like, I felt like I always felt like the most intelligent viewers, Roni was the one. Mm-hmm. Like, Roni's the one that got me into Housewives.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bethany, you know.
And we should mention, too, that Roni had a soft reboot. I guess it was season five, I think it was. It was after they got rid of Cindy Barshop and Kelly Buncimo and Alex McCord. That was a soft reboot. And I remember at the time feeling similarly to how I'm feeling with this reboot of like, they had Carol, Heather, and Aviva they brought in. And it felt like those first couple episodes, and if you go back and rewatch, it feels like it's a disconnect between them and the old guard of women. And I remember just critically feeling similarly of like, oh, this isn't working. How did they ruin my show and all that kind of stuff? And so that gives me hope, I think, with this reboot of, I ultimately grew to love Heather and Carol and Aviva and that era of Housewives before they brought Bethany back. And so there is a little bit of a precedent. Obviously, this reboot is much more diverse, which is fantastic. And it's a completely different cast.
How do you feel about the casting of the Roni legacy trip, like the new whatever, when they're going to
I don't understand Kristen. My problem with Kristen, and it seems like what happened when she left the show, was that she didn't want to talk about the relationship because her husband was in the news for all that Ashley Madison stuff. And so if she comes in there and like kind of explains a lot of that and gives us some of her that situation, like, great, I'll love her being back. But she didn't seemingly want to talk about that before when she was on the show. And so it's like, well, what did she give us otherwise? Like, she didn't really give us anything else. So I didn't really understand that. I would have preferred even Aviva, who's a little weirder, that we would have gotten something more. I didn't understand the Kristen. But I don't even think they understood. I think it was...
Yeah.
That was another issue I had with this whole rollout. I think they announced that too soon. They shouldn't have announced the Roni legacy unless they had the cast nailed down, because, yeah, I was so thrilled when they had initially announced that, of like, oh, we get both. Like, what an embarrassment of riches. We're going to be getting the Roni that we loved for all these years, and then we're also going to be getting this new franchise with brand new people. Like, how thrilling was that? And then I think a little bit of the air was taken out of the sails. And I keep saying, I wonder what like the group texts are with the other franchises, because here's the thing. If this works ratings wise, I think they will do this to all of the franchises. It just depends. We haven't seen the ratings yet, but if kind of the vibe amongst fans and the ratings are really good, they're going to recast Jersey and Atlanta and Orange County and all of these. I think.
Cannot believe that they brought back both Teresa and Melissa after all of this, after all of these months of saying like, there's no way forward. And yet,
but I'm sort of skeptical about that, because I don't know that I've seen it confirmed by Bravo that they're both coming back. Have you? Like, I feel like there's,
I thought
different,
it was confirmed.
Maybe it is confirmed. I don't know, but I'm shocked too, because yeah, I worry. The ratings were really good for Jersey, especially at the end. I think they went up towards the end of the reunion. So of course that's encouraging, I think, to the network to like have the same cast back. But I do worry it'll feel stale, or if there's a stalemate between Teresa and Melissa, I think it's going to feel tough.
Can I just throw in this one other thing? Can we quickly drop into Beverly Hills? Do you see or do you know that Erica Jane met with the victims yesterday?
Yes, she met with the victims of the of Bamboozle Jane, met with Tommy Two-Tone's victims. And
they're doing a new documentary. The LA Times is doing a new like Housewife and the Hustler documentary. So it's going to be a while before that comes out, but it was filmed. She met with them for like 45 minutes and...
Wait, so they filmed for the documentary, but not for Beverly Hills Housewives?
Correct.
Huh. I'm curious about Beverly. I worry about Beverly Hills Housewives. They just announced that they wrapped filming on Mauricio's new show on Netflix, and they also recently wrapped on Beverly Hills. And I'm like, I'm skeptical. Yeah. Maybe I'm being a conspiracy theorist, but I'm skeptical about the whole Kyle Richards news thing because, yeah, I worry about it.
I don't buy all that.
You don't buy it, yeah. What about the, do you buy the relationship rumors with the, what's her name, Morgan?
Doubtful.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're friends. Although, who gets matching tattoos? I don't know.
You know what I thought was the weirdest thing about that whole situation was the Amazon Live they did together. Because that's okay, strange to me.
This is where I landed with it. This is a strategic business move. Yeah. She probably invested in her music, mm-hmm. business, in her whatever. She's probably an investor of some sort. And now they're in business together.
Yeah, because these people, all the Bravo celebrities have been doing these Amazon Lives now. And like Amazon hires them to push the Amazon merch. But I don't normally see them doing it together. Maybe there is a situation where they've done like a Craig and a Paige one together, or like is people that make sense on these shows. But I thought it was so random that they had Morgan, who at least I didn't really know Morgan, this woman, before this whole thing with Kyle. And I do like country music, so I'm not fully immersed in the country music world, but I know enough about country music that I was a little bit surprised because I didn't know who this was. And so then to see her popping up on Kyle's like Amazon Live promos when Kyle, there's so many other people that I would more naturally put Kyle with. And the way those business deals work, it's weird to me because I would have assumed they would have had to negotiate together, or they would have had to somehow work together to figure out payment, because when getting hired for an influencer, they're going through one agent. So like, are they repped by the same agent, or did Kyle say, oh, you can use my agent to do this deal? Like, there's just too many questions about behind that.
This is all, it's kind of like when you see Pink all of a sudden has Eminem doing a feature on one of her songs. It's because they're on the same label. They have the same manager
and or
management
same
wants their clients to work together.
Mm-hmm. I'm fishy about it all. I'm fishy. But I'm excited to watch it. I, again, feel worried that it's going to be one of those situations where it's like they didn't really have much for Beverly Hills. And the thing, putting my behind-the-scenes cap on, we've read that they had so many housewives back. And I don't remember when this was said or who exactly it was said by. I think it was said by Andy, maybe on Watch What Happens Live or something, but I don't want to say specifically where or when this was said. But I remember people have said in the past that usually when they bring back people, they sort of allege, like with Brandy Glanville, for instance, it's like the season's going bad, we'll bring in Brandy to kind of spice things up. And so we do know over the course of last season's filming, they brought back a lot of different people. They brought back Denise in some capacity. They brought back different people for pop-ins. I think Camille filmed. And so I always get skeptical because I'm thinking of when I've heard
Kim
that.
Kim Richards
filmed. And am I making that up? I know I didn't hear it in my dreams, but I feel like production or behind the scenes, they've said, well, if the season's not working, we'll bring in someone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think that worries me when they bring in people, and I love to see people back. But then when this Kyle stuff came out after they were wrapped filming, knowing that they had so many people back, I'm like, well, did she really give enough during the season? I don't know. Jesse, this is why we're all, I get like a, what's the tinfoil hat people? You know what I'm talking about? Okay. Back to The Real Housewives of New York. Any other thoughts that you had regarding the first episode of the season? Oh, I do have something I want to say. I'm sorry. I just asked you a question.
No,
you
go first. Ahead. I think my thoughts are dry at this point. I mean, let's see. They're saying that they were sort of inferring that Catch was like, so 2005. Catch opened in 2011.
Yeah, see, I don't know what the vibe is with Catch in New York. The one here, it opened, it was like such a, the one here at least, when it opened, which wasn't that long ago, I don't think the LA one opened, but it was like a kind of cool place to be.
No, it definitely was a cool place to be, but then it turned into a tourist trap.
Yeah. Do you like a chain restaurant?
Like it's very Bridge and Tunnel. Do I like a chain restaurant?
Because
let me tell you define chain restaurant.
I'm talking about the Margaritaville nachos specifically. They're fantastic. And sometimes
I would love to go to Fridays now.
Sometimes you just want I'm from Ohio. Sometimes I just want that fucking Applebee's sampler.
You know what I love? A Cracker Barrel.
Oh, interesting. You know, Cracker Barrel, I don't know if they still do this, but they used to make the burgers on a potato bun. And I loved it. The bun at the Cracker Barrel burger when I was a kid was it.
Warm biscuits at Cracker Barrel. I want to sit in that rocking chair out front.
Pick up a Reba McEntire CD on the way out. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How you go through like an antique store to get to the restaurant. That's fun.
Pictures like Reba McEntire for Dillard's in the Cracker Barrel.
But like, no. Is Catch a Cracker Barrel? No.
No. No.
Do I still want to go there? No.
No. I don't know. And I've never had the food at Catch, so I don't know if the food is good or anything. I haven't been there. I think I like walked through, met someone there, because the one in West Hollywood is sort of by all like the Abbey and the gay bar. So I feel like I met someone at the bar there once, and then we went out, or a group of friends. Okay, so the last thing I really want to mention is Brynn's tagline, which this also might be why I loved her, and I think this is probably dividing people a little bit because it leans into the craziness of Housewives, but she says, I love to laugh, but make me mad, and I'll date your dad.
Well, yeah, where's that going?
Obviously, like, I think they showed in the coming attractions that maybe she's flirting with someone's dad or something, but it's such an insane tagline.
I hate to I know I keep bringing up Jenna Lyons, but it's because, like, she's why I'm kind of watching this at this point. Her tagline
is
bottom of the barrel.
What is it?
So, it was very, it almost seemed like one they didn't use for Tinsley.
Oh.
It was like, my eyelashes may be fake, but I'm real. Like, it was something, because she has a line of lashes. I'm like, we can't do better than like a Tinsley knockoff.
Wait, what was Tinsley's?
Like, you're Jenna fucking Lyons.
What was Tinsley's lash tagline? She had a lash tagline. Or wasn't it like, if you're checking out my mugshot, like my
lashes?
That
was her first
one.
Something? No, there was the one that everybody used to imitate.
I missed
Tinsley. God, where is she? You know, I recently was thinking about her and I looked on Instagram. She hasn't posted in like years.
I wish they brought, I would have liked some sort of bridge to the old group. So like, I would have loved Tinsley. I think she would have fit in well with this group.
Leah would have fit with this group.
Yeah, like I would have liked some, even if it wasn't a full time, like I wish somehow we bridged the gap in the first episode with like a group event or something like that. I think it would have been so fun to have maybe the old cast. This might have been too difficult to do and maybe the old cast wouldn't have wanted to do it, but it would have been so great to like do a Vanderpump Rules situation where we're at a party with this group and we see one of them leave or something to go with another group. I mean, this would be so produced and it would be too much, but I want it to like
you
flow.
You want the Beverly Hills into Vanderpump and then the Vanderpump into Summer House, like the seamless transition.
Well, I hate how they do this with these shows where we're not acknowledging that it's a show. Sometimes they're breaking the fourth wall a little bit, but particularly in these first episodes, it's like, I want to hear them talk about like, this is a reboot. Or I would have loved if they filmed a whole month with that other person, I would have loved them to talk about it, like, or somehow acknowledge it. And I get frustrated sometimes because they will do a little fourth wall breaking, but they don't go in as hard as some I want them to sometimes. And so I would like to us acknowledge, like, yeah, we recast this whole show and it's completely rebooted. Like, let's discuss it. And I think that's in the pre-season interviews that the cast has been doing with different outlets, the thing that most people are most interested in is like, who reached out? Did Ramona's shade you at a party? Did Dorinda DM you? Like, what were the things? That's what we're also interested in. So it would have been nice to get like a little bit of a bridge. Doesn't have to be huge. It could have just been some acknowledgement. It's like Vanderpump Rules, that one season when they fired all those people. I'm like, why are we not acknowledging this? It's crazy. Or on Atlanta, it was cracking me up this past week when Sheree was inviting everyone. Did they go to Portugal? I forget what their cast trip is. But she's like, yeah, my healing person. She kept saying my healing person told me that I should go and invite the girls together and do this healing trip. And I was like, at this point, at so many years in, can't we just say, like, this is our cast trip? Like, when are we going to give up that facade? Yeah. We know. Even the very basic, the people who don't watch religiously like us and take notes, like, they know they're doing a cast trip.
Yeah. It's very obvious.
We all know. Jess, any other final thoughts before I let you go? I think I got everything in. The fashions were good. I liked that they were accidentally connected with them jackets at the end. That was cracking me up. But,
yes.
But I would have been fucking pissed if somebody was in my closet trying on clothes. I'd have been NeNe Leakes on them. Like, do you remember how NeNe got mad? Like, that would have been me. I don't like...
Oh, yeah.
I don't want people doing that.
I liked how... Oh, yeah, when NeNe, like, kicked the producers out.
Yeah, because they were filming in her closet. I would have been the same.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have been the exact same way, but I would have been pissed if people were filming in my closet.
Yeah.
With Roni, again, I say that it's just impossible to know after one episode because it's so little and none of them are good at this time.
You have to watch the full season and then you assess how do we do
it? Yeah, and so we'll see at the end of the season how this works or how this plays. But I'm excited to get to know them more. But I didn't watch this and was like, oh, this is so good
All the Twitter and thread gays, they think it's great.
But did it make you want to tune in wasn't really much that I was like, oh, that makes me want to tune in next week, or it was like,
not really.
All the good stuff to me, it was like, fine. It was fine.
Yeah. Honestly, the honest truth, the only draw for me is Jenna Lyons.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The only draw for me rather. But that's enough. Like, I'll keep watching it.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how long she does it. Like, I'm curious if she'll probably do another season. And like, I don't know how long she's going.
I just don't think she wants to be there. Even when I'm watching interviews, have you watched any of behind the interviews? Andy and Jenna were on the Today Show together.
The Today Show. Oh my God.
Jenna.
It was like she was being held at gunpoint.
Yes. That's the vibe I get. It's like, I don't think she wants to do it or be doing any of these things. She's doing it for press. And that's a job. And it is a job.
She's a reserved, normal person. She's not made for reality TV.
Yeah, right.
But she is inherently very interesting.
Are you liking Crappy Lake? Are you watching it?
Yeah, I do like it a lot.
Silly. Yeah, it's silly.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Jess, we have to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to ask you about your podcast. So stay tuned.
Oh, my God.
And this episode of Everything Iconic is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. Now, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but it's definitely allergy season. You all know I've been struggling a little bit. I usually love the springtime, but I struggle with my allergies, which are just not the most fun. But luckily with Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, the only tissues I like to use, I can say, bring on the blooms, and I can face those allergies head on. Now, Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved, so you can attack watery eyes and battle runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. That's why I love these, because they're so incredibly soft and I don't want to touch my nose with something that's not. Now, I am obsessed with Kleenex. I think they are so really just the best to do it. So for this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on. Again, this allergy season, do not pick up something else. Grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
We're back, Jess. Okay, so tell me about your podcast, Finding Fire Island. You also host Hot Takes and Deep Dives, which I'm sure I've said this to you before, but I think you're one of the best interviewers. You're so good. And so I always love when you have a guest on Hot Takes and Deep Dives, that because I just know you're going to get to the meat of what I want to know. So I appreciate that.
Listen, that's the only reason I do it, is because I want to get to it. I want to get to the real shit. So let me ask you, have you ever been to Provincetown or Fire Island?
No, it's on my bucket list. But I've just never, to be quite honest, I've never really traveled much. I moved from the Midwest to California. And I mean, only when I started touring my podcast and stuff was I able to go to some of these places, because I had never been to New York until my late 20s. It was a place where I always... looked, I remember being a kid and being like, oh my God, New York looks so glamorous. Like, I just wanted to go to like see a Broadway show. Rosie, who we both love, she always had the Broadway people on. But anyway, long story short, no, I've never been to Fire Island, but it's like on the list of, I have to get there eventually.
Yeah, I mean, so I've been doing hot takes and deep dives for years now. And a common question when I would have like a Rosie or a Sandra Bernhard or a Margaret Cho on, like I have asked them in the course of those interviews, tell me about your, if I knew they were like New York people or people who I had seen perform on Fire Island, I would often ask, tell me about your times performing on Fire Island, or like, do you go to P-Town? Do you go to Fire Island? And it would completely disarm them because they're not really getting asked that by other interviewers. And oftentimes you'd really get the real person. They'd be like, oh, I've been wanting to get this off my chest. And they'll like bitch about something for like 5 minutes or like give their take on, you know, their preference between the two. And I've always been obsessed with Fire Island. And in recent years, I've really started like doing a lot of digging on the history of it because it's the two oldest gay communities in the United States, Cherry Grove and the Fire Island Pines. And the history is so fascinating. And the two places, it's like you would think that these tiny remote villages would, it would all just be just like gay. I mean, and it is kind of a free for all, but what plays out in these tiny villages, it's very much like a microcosm for the United States, like racism, politics, socioeconomic issues. And we explore that through the series, and it's like documentary style. So there, it's all strung together narratively, with interviews with like Brian Moylan, big, Housewives guy, Margaret Cho, Joel Kim Booster, Matt Rogers, I've got Lady Bunny, and then people who've been there since like the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and so.
And we should mention Joel wrote a movie called Fire Island. It was just nominated for an Emmy, which also starred Matt Rogers. It's a fantastic rom-com. But so he's interviewed along with so many other fantastic people for your podcast, and
He talks about, in the episode that's coming out this week, he talks about being part of a 200-plus person orgy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now I need... Wait, what does he say? Tell me a little.
The episode that's out this week. So, like, the first three were very much, like, laying the groundwork. Here's where we are. And it has, like, a comedic tilt to it. But this one this week is all about like the historic like parties and kind of the hedonistic atmosphere that Fire Island is known for. And so in the middle of all the interviews, I would just ask people, tell me about like, what was your wildest experience? So I string them all together at the end of this week's episode. Matt Rogers talks about eating ass on the beach and then getting really sick from it. and like, you know, in the Fire Island movie, how they go to the underwear party.
Yes.
So like, that's a real thing. So like the guy who like created the underwear party, he's part of it. And I talked to him this is all in this week's episode. I asked him like, did you know that they were going to recreate your event? They copied his flyer that's all over Fire Island. He's been using for you. And he's like, to be honest, I was really pissed. And it would be like, he's a big nightlife promoter. He's like, it'd be like if I were creating an event and calling it Fox Searchlight Pictures, you'd be really pissed too.
Yeah, I get that.
So like, people are really honest and really open. Even Margaret Cho tells these crazy sex stories.
Oh, I can't wait to listen.
Yeah,
it's got such a lore. There was even a reality show called Fire Island that was produced by Kelly and Mark of
that Kelly
Ripa. Yeah, I don't.
That one sucks.
I watched it, but I don't remember much sticking out for me from it.
Wait, going back to the Fire Island movie, can we talk about the fact that you auditioned for this
movie? I did. Yeah, I did. Obviously, did not get it. It was during the COVID. It was, it was like early on in the self-tape thing. Main thing that I remember from it was like trying to figure out like, what's my beach wear for this self-tape? And then I couldn't land on anything. Jess, thank you so much. Everyone's going to check out Finding Fire Island wherever you listen to podcasts, and also your other podcast, Hot Takes and Deep Dives, where you do fantastic interviews, and you're just great. So where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, you can follow me, JessXNYC, on Instagram. That's the place. Slide into my DMs. I'm trying to get back. I'm trying to date. Listen,
what kind of date? What do you want?
Oh, man. I listen, I like dark hair and dark eyes. I like red hair and green eyes. Let's start there then.
I normally ask my guests their favorite Mariah Carey song and the sexiest man alive, but since you're talking about dating, like who's your sexiest woman alive? Like who's your ideal celebrity date?
Listen, I love the character that Jennifer Beals plays in The L Word. Mm. Her character is fucking iconic. The character of Bette Porter, if you just plug in Bette Porter, you'll understand what we're talking about.
Okay.
But can I give my favorite Mariah? I'm a lamb. Okay, I would say in this moment, I love Forever.
That's my all-time favorite song.
Is it?
My all-time favorite Mariah song. People don't normally ask me. Forever is my all-time favorite. It's such a classic ballad. It's from the Daydream album. I have like an emotional attachment to it, but it also, I just think, a beautiful like 90s ballad that they don't make anymore. It feels very much like a kind of a Celine Dion-y ballad or something, but her voice is like, if you ever try to hear somebody cover Forever, they can't do it because that song is so vocally hard to sing.
It's the perfect Mariah song.
Yeah, it's so good.
A deep cut.
I know. I'm so surprised you say that. Yeah, that's my all-time favorite. I love so much of her. I know. I love Butterfly. I love every. She's my favorite. But that
and
one.
And her book was great.
Yeah, it's so, so good. Jess, thank you so much for stopping by and recapping Roni with me. I want to remind listeners that I think we're going to be checking in with Roni here on Everything Iconic, but we're not going to be doing the full-blown recaps until maybe later on in the season or next season. We're not sure yet. We're flying by the seat of our pants. But Jess, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. I love you so much.
Love you too.